Hello and welcome to Millennial 2021 again. This is, I think, the eighth night, and this is the first stream tonight, and it's with the Traditional Britain Group. Now, the Traditional Britain Group should be known to most of you, I would think, especially those of you who are in Britain. It's an organisation that's been going for quite a few years, and I have with me Gregory Lauder-Frost, who is the head of the organisation, and Andrew Moffat. So welcome, gentlemen, to Millennial. Thank you for appearing. Gregory, would you like to introduce the TBG to people who might not have heard of it? Just describe it and what it does. Thank you.
Okay. Well, good evening. The TBG has been going for 21 years. And they're basically a continuation of the old Monday Club and the old Western Girls Institute. And we really believe in a traditional Britain. We believe in no immigration. We believe in the 1970 Conservative Party election manifesto, when they said that they would encourage, as the government, immigrants to return to their natural homelands. And we still support that. You know, the government's gone left, they've abandoned that, but we think it was great. That was the best proposal they ever made, and they just reneged on it, of course. And now they've adopted the left-wing mantra all round. So that's one of our great aims, is to keep up the pressure there. We are also in favour of a traditional family, a mother, a proper mother, a real mother, a father, a real father. Right. In that respect, we support the Hungarian government, which has passed legislation to that effect. So I think that we believe that people should have to work and shouldn't be getting state handouts too easily, as they do now. And we're just opposed to all the socialist and liberal fascism dogma that we've been lumbered with in the last 50 years, really. And we're now becoming an oppressed society. We now have laws and regulations that actually oppress the people, such as clamping down on free speech, freedom of expression, which obviously must eventually lead to freedom of thought. The TBG, it actually has a wide agenda. I urge people to look at the TBG page on Metapedia and check it out, because we have a full set of aims and objectives there. And I think
I'll link to that below. I'll find it and add that to the list of links. Yeah. The links I've given are the actual website, the .org, and the Telegram page, the Telegram channel, because I like to encourage everyone to get onto there.
Okay, so that'll be our committee lot that are on the Telegram. I'm not on. I don't run the TBG. The TBG is run by a committee, and I'm not on Telegram. So there's the evidence.
Well, I didn't imagine that you would be running the page on your own, but I know that I think I know the guy who runs it. Now, you said that used the expression liberal fascism.
Yeah.
The last 2 years have obviously seen a real change in various ways to do with, because of COVID, or justified by COVID. Would you say that? Well, what would you say about the last 2 years? First of all, about what I just said there. Do you think that there's been a cultural change in Britain?
Well, I think the last 2 years have been a complete disaster, and I think that they should have treated COVID the same way they treat any serious flu epidemic. I think the lockdowns and everything were a mistake. I think they've badly affected the economy. They've badly affected people's lives. They've badly affected people's education. And I think these things are pretty unacceptable. The level, I mean, I'm no scientist, but the level of deaths compared to the level of our population is minuscule. It's absolutely minuscule. And the level of deaths that were due only to COVID are so minuscule that they're off the scale. And the problem is the government are picking up everyone whose doctor has said, oh yes, they had COVID symptoms and they've died, and the government have announced that these people have all died from COVID. Well, they haven't all died from COVID. In fact, several reports have said that the vast majority, the overwhelming majority, you know, something like 90% of those who have died, who have had COVID symptoms, actually died from another primary cause. But because COVID was present, the government have flagged that up. I think this is completely wrong. I mean, we always have a vast number of people, 30 or 40,000 people every year that die from influenza, ordinary, everyday influenzas.
Indeed. So why would you say that they're doing this? I mean, what do you think is going on?
I mean, why do they do anything? Why do they do so many things? Why do they tell us how to speak, what to say?
Don't get me started on that.
why do the government acquiesce in people losing their employment because of their political opinions? I mean, if you live in a democracy, everybody is entitled to their opinion, the far left, the far right, and all those in between. Everybody in a democracy is entitled to hold an opinion and should be entitled to say what they like, when they like, wherever they like, without being prosecuted, without losing their jobs. Now, that is not the case in Britain. People are being hunted down by the liberal fascists and by the socialists for different reasons, and they're being hunted down in their jobs and turfed out of organizations, turfed out of institutions, turfed out of universities, turfed out of schools. Now, this is completely unacceptable in a free society.
Well, I think
that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think the conclusion is that we don't live in a free society anymore, and probably not, probably haven't for some considerable time. It's just been the exhaust fumes of a previous society that made us think we were still free.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I outlined at the TBG conference, one of our speakers broke his leg and couldn't turn up, and I had to fill in. And I outlined, I had a speech ready, and I outlined to the audience all of the legislation since the late 60s that's come out right into the 21st century, which is basically oppressive legislation which attacks ordinary people for what they say and prosecutes them, all of these hate crimes and all the rest of it. All of this legislation, the whole lot of it, bar one act, was Labour socialist legislation. Now, you would have thought that any real Conservative government would have repealed these laws or sections of them. But they haven't. They have adopted the Marxist socialists' approach to everything, particularly race. You know, why can't you talk about race? Why must you be forced everybody's equal? Why can't you be like a flat earther? I mean, in London, we have a flat earth society. You know, why must they be forced to accept that the world is round? If they want to stand on their head all day That's fine. But in a free society, you should be able to express your views and hold an opinion, and a bad luck if it offends somebody. Bad luck. Nobody has a right not to be offended. Nobody.
Of course, and, you know, the mass immigration offends you and me, but nobody cares about us being offended.
Well, mass immigration, you know, no government has dealt with this in the past 50 years. Promises, no action at all. In fact, the government, regardless of its political context, have completely betrayed the British people. They have completely and absolutely betrayed our nation because they have allowed millions of aliens into our country. And when they all have a natural homeland somewhere else, they all have a natural homeland. My family have lived in Britain for thousands of years, and that's proven by DNA. These people, they have no right to be here, and we should not feel obliged to say, oh, yes, you can come in here. If I smashed on somebody's front door and said, let me in, I demand to be let in, you have to let me in, you must let me in, it's my human right, the people inside the house would say, clear off or we're calling the police.
Of course.
And that should be the case with our country. We should be turning all these people around, all of them. And the whole thing has now become a quagmire. It's a political quagmire and nobody wants to address it. But what they want to do, they want to penalize the indigenous population. They're saying, the government is saying, we cannot address the alien immigration issue. So what we're going to do, we are going to force the indigenous population who we purport to represent, we are going to force them to accept these people, and we are going to prosecute them if they don't.
And this has been the attitude for 50 years now, as you said, since the late 60s.
But it's much worse now. It's much worse now because there is no conservative government anymore. It's a liberal government. It's a Mark II liberal party. Tragically, people seem unable to grasp that. Although the Shropshire by-election may be a light in the dark for us. But we have a Mark II liberal party, and then we have a liberal party, the Mark I liberal party, and then we have the socialists. So we have a complete left-wing establishment. And there is nowhere for real conservatives to go. And when people like me raise all these issues, they say, oh, he's an extremist. He's a far rightist. No, I'm just a normal person expressing normal views that most of the population believe, but are now even afraid to say anything. They're afraid to speak out. They're petrified. How many times have you heard people saying, you can't say that. You can't say that. Why can't you say that? Why can't you say anything?
Yes. I mean, it used to be...
What's going on here?
Yeah.
Don't people even realize what they're saying when they say, you can't say that?
Of course,
I'm going to come in now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hello, Andrew.
I apologize very much to your listeners. My computer decided to crash. I've been unable to upload a photograph either. It's not terribly professional of me presently, and not terribly helpful to your viewers. But nevertheless, I am back online again. I've got my computer up and running, so heaven knows what happened. I think it's just a bit old, and I need to find time to renew it. But time is a bit of a shortage at the moment. But yes, we're in a most dreadful situation. I agree with everything Gregory's just said. And, you know, I look back, I must be one of the few people still alive today whose father fought not in the last war alone, but in the First World War as well. He was a veteran of both World Wars. And as a little boy, I used to meet his colleagues, his comrades in arms, and I used to ask them as a small child, as all children do, what did you do in the war? That sort of thing. My father fought in the Somme, the Battle of Arras and the Third Battle of Ypres. He was wounded several times in action, and then he volunteered all over again for the Second War. And to explain this, my father was in his 60s, but he had children, and he would be absolutely devastated if he could see what these politicians have done today. And I had reason to say to one of them a few months ago, I said, you're not fit to wear the poppy. And that is exactly the case with most of these people. They're not fit to wear the poppy. What I wondered, did those people die and fight for, shedding their blood all over the battlefields of Flanders and elsewhere? Those wonderful people of a heritage, of a culture, of an identity, who were seeking to preserve those things for future generations, and that legacy has been completely thrown away. There's been no consultation or consent whatsoever from the British public, and the British public are completely against immigration, completely against the transformation of our realm in the way that it's been in the way that it's been altered over the last 50 or 60 years, without any debate whatsoever. And that is the situation today. And when you raise this matter with the politicians, they will not deal with it. They won't deal with it because they haven't got any answers. We've now got about 30 or 40 years, and we're going to be reduced to minority status in our own ancestral homeland.
Yeah, it's a dire situation. I believe that it's much sooner than that for the children, for the under 10s. I think it's about 2030, actually. I'm not sure about that. But this is appalling. And as you both said, the British public have always been consistently against mass immigration. I think from the start, but definitely from the time of Enoch Powell, because we know that 74% of the Gallup poll respondents agreed with him. And I'm not sure what to ask you about that, except what do you think happened? I mean, presumably something happened in the political culture of Britain after World War II, I guess, between 1945 and 1968, to ensure that if any politician did raise his head above the parapet, like Powell did, his career would be wrecked by it.
Well, am I on?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Well, this was the beginning. Powell's treatment by Heath was the beginning of this sort of cancel culture scenario. That was the very beginning. And I think it goes back really to the Second World War. And when the Second World War finished, the left won, the liberal plutocrats won the war, and the communists. And so the broad left won the war. As we saw after the war, the Labour Party got in with a landslide election. And I think that after that, conservatism had a very bad image, because people were, you know, would say, oh, well, that's what the Nazis did. Irrelevant of the fact that it might have had a conservative history long before the Nazis ever existed. And I think that also after the war, lots of liberals realized that their party was never, ever going to get back into government. And of course, it hasn't as a single party entity. And so they moved over into the Conservative Party. And so you've got people like Ted Heath, and they were crass liberals. Nobody could accuse them of being conservative. I can't think of anything seriously conservative that Ted Heath ever said. And we constantly come across this all the time. You only have to listen to these members of parliament over the members of parliament over the last 50 years, who say, "Oh yes, we're conservatives. We're members of the Conservative Party." Yeah, they might be members of the Conservative Party, but they are not conservatives. They've conserved nothing, and they have gone along with the liberal ideals. You know, they keep talking about British values. We're supporting British values. No, they're not. What values? Who said they were British values? The liberals said they're British values. They have introduced their values as British values. They have erased conservatism. So we have seen a party, a conservative party, that has conserved nothing whatsoever in the last 50 or 60 years, nothing. They have conserved nothing at all. In fact, they have adopted a complete agenda that is in, you know, there's no comparison that would show it to be different to the Labour Party. That they're just two lots of kindergarten kiddies in Parliament arguing with each other about stupid things like, did you have a party at number 10? Who gives a stuff whether they had a bloody party at number 10? There are far greater issues at hand in this country than somebody having a party at number 10. And this is what they do. They distract. They distract the population with left-wing nonsense, the parliamentarians today, and anyone that can show me a distinct difference between the people on either side of the house, I'll give them a 10 quid note. There's no significant difference whatsoever, and we have no opposition now to the left-wing agenda. The Conservative Party have completely taken on board all the social agendas of every minority organization, every minority group going. And these minority groups throughout my lifetime have all been on the left. You know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the whole thing is completely chaotic. And that's why people like us exist, the traditional Britain group, exists to fight this continuing trend of treachery to our people and to a normal, decent, everyday society that wants to live in peace, adopting norms that all of our ancestors would recognize, not the norms of total degeneracy and taking on board the arguments of immigrants who have no right to come here and to tell us what we should be doing, what we should be saying, and who we should like.
Well, indeed, and a couple of points. And just, Andrew, if you could just wait a second, I just want to respond to what Gregory said. You mentioned earlier immigrants being offended, and we're now terrified to offend them. It's now moved on even from that to causing emotional distress or causing any kind of psychological harm, which of course is so broad that it could mean anything. Now, on the matter of the party at 10 Downing Street, or where, yes, I think it was at 10 Downing Street, the reason, I agree with everything that you just said, but the reason that people are so annoyed about that party happening is that it shows the utter hypocrisy of the government in office, because it shows that they weren't bothered about, well, while they were denying us Christmas last year, while they were saying that that little children can't hug granny and you shouldn't sing for very long, and if you do sing you should try to not breathe out very much, and all this nonsense, and a certain number of people limited to a certain number of people, all that awful nonsense that they were coming out with last December. While they were doing that, they really didn't believe in any of it. It was a fraud. It was a lie, because they themselves weren't taking this stuff seriously. And I think that's why it's so significant. Even though it's a petty thing, it's trivial, it shows the insincerity of the government.
But why is it a fraud? They're fraudulent fraudulent. They have a sign, a label calling themselves a conservative party. Of course they're fraudulent. I mean, of course. I mean, why is anyone upset by this bunch of clowns? You know, I'm hoping that this by-election in Shropshire, where the Conservatives lost about 30,000 votes, is going to be replicated in the next general election. I'm hoping that tribal voting is going to reach a dead end here. I think it's time that remember, this Conservative Party blocked all attempts at electoral reform. And the reason they did that is because our archaic, hopeless, useless electoral system is totally fraudulent and keeps them in office, even when they have a complete minority, even when you have countless constituencies where the majority of people did not vote for the person who wins the seat. You know, all this has got to be corrected. A fraudulent party with a fraudulent name doing everything wrong. And I'm hoping that the Shropshire by-election is going to be replicated. I hope people are going to say, I'm not just voting for this party because that's what I've always done, or that's what my father and mother did. I hope they're going to say, I'm going to vote for a party on its manifesto promises, and I'm not going to ever do this again. Forget tribal voting. And that you know, if they do that, then there'll be change.
Yes, and tribal voting is the bane of political life in Britain because it enables everything to just roll on endlessly. But I want to bring Andrew back in because he's been wanting to speak for some time. So, Andrew, would you have anything to say about what Gregory has been saying?
I agree entirely with Gregory, what he's just said. I mean, the point is, we've got this two-party system. Basically, they represent exactly the same things on the pertinent topics on immigration. The Conservative Party is essentially a socially Marxist party. Okay, it believes in global capitalism, and it's married that to social Marxism, which is political correctness. So you've got a sort of synthesis between communism and global capital. Communism in the form of the Frankfurt School's critical theory, bringing down the institutions of the state, destroying tradition, culture, identity, and that's been married to global capitalism, where capital sloshes around, gobbling up our smaller manufacturers, reinvesting its capital overseas to get the biggest possible return at the lowest possible investment, making our people unemployed, transferring technology overseas. It's that sort of thing, and that's what the Conservative Party is now excelling at. The only way to look at it is to regard the Conservative Party as an occupational government. That's more or less what we have. And we've touched briefly upon these Christmas parties and so on. It's one rule for them and it's one rule for the rest of the population. And if you examine in any detail these lockdowns, this vaccination policy, it just does not stand up to scrutiny. For example, I drove past a pub the other day, absolutely packed full of people. And yet we're now being told, well, we've got to stay at home and work at home if we can. There's too many inconsistencies here. But the biggest problem of the lot, and I appreciate this is a very sensitive topic because a lot of people have naturally trusted the government. I'm not quite so certain why, because they've lied to us on everything else. They've lied to us about immigration. The Conservative Party, for instance, just before a general election, finds all its union flags, dusts them down, has this sort of tribal mating dance with the public. It talks tough about immigration, but then when they get in, they open the doors even wider. They've lied to us about the European Union. They've lied on so many different things. And they're lying to us about these lockdowns too. Now, there are two points I'd like to raise here. If these things are so transparent, why is it that they're burying the science? Why is it that eminent physicians, virologists, doctors, immunologists, professors, and others have been censored by social media, by the mainstream media, by the BBC? In the old days, there was always a second view that was aired. But all of these people, these experts, have been censored. You've got to look on BitChute or alternative media in order to find out what they're saying. Now, that's not a proper debate, and it shows that there is censorship going on. And censorship reminds you of two regimes during the 20th century, which I don't have to repeat here. That's the sort of censorship we've got going on at the moment. Then you've got fraudulent science. You've got a PCR test that is so highly calibrated that it will pick up almost anything. You've had the, in order to create fear, you've had the figures, the statistics botched deliberately so that it suggests that more people are dying of C19 than is the actuality. So people are dying with it rather than of it. Well, we got to an extreme in New Zealand the other day where someone who had C19 was actually shot by the police. It was a criminal of some sort, shot by the police, and was registered as a C19 victim. Well, you couldn't really make this up. So this Omicron, or whatever it's called, this latest variant, it's no more than flu. People get flu in the winter. We're in the winter at the moment. People are getting infected with it, but they're not dying of it. And the government is using this in order to facilitate a further lockdown. And someone on Sage was had a conversation recently, I think it was yesterday or today, and they said that the government is looking for the worst case scenario. This is a member of Sage who admitted this. They're looking for the worst possible case scenario so that it fits in with the government's policy, which is to lock down again. Now, when you consider all of these things, then yes, it warrants further investigation because there's something evil going on. It's not just happening here, it's happening everywhere. And that's why I say the only way you can look at this government, this Conservative Party, is one that has been completely taken over. It's one that's been subverted. And you've got to look at it in terms of an occupational government. It's taking its instructions from unelected bodies, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, organizations of that sort. You've got supranational authority. And it's this supranational authority which is now controlling the policy of Britain. So although we're out of the European Union, it doesn't make any difference.
I think this has been a huge surprise for people, or at least some people, that Brexit really means nothing. Because we are just as vulnerable to control from outside as we ever were. In fact, much more vulnerable to it than we realised we were. I think that's been a huge eye-opener for everyone. These NGOs, world organisations, are able to just dictate, clearly just dictating policy. There's unfortunately Gregory has dropped out. I think his internet connection might be unreliable. Winter is a trying time for technology, I've got to say, even these days. But I'm sure he'll be back. This is a situation where conservatives of the like real conservatives, I think, have to understand and accept that this isn't the world of that we thought it was. We're operating in a very different theatre, as it were. Gregory's back. Hello, welcome back, Gregory.
Yeah, I'm very sorry about that. My internet went down.
That's fine. Well, thank you for persevering. would you like to comment on what Andrew was saying about these global organizations that seem to be dictating policy?
Well, of course, I didn't hear all that he was saying because I lost my internet connection.
Let me come in again, and he can pick up the gist. We were talking, Gregory, about authority seems to have imperceptibly transferred from an elected House of Commons to supranational organizations such as the World Economic Forum, the WHO, the Gates Foundation, the Trilateral Commission. There's a whole batch of these, and they seem to be determining at the top government policy. There's been a little bit of rebellion amongst some of the MPs, and I almost wonder whether some of these MPs rebelled, safe in the knowledge that Labour would side with the government in order to get through these totalitarian measures which passed last week. But let's shine the spotlight on another actor here. Let's shine the spotlight now, because he needs to have this spotlight shined upon him. That's Prince Charles, who's been a regular attender of the World Economic Forum. He appears to get on in cracking fettle with Klaus Schwab. And I think we need to shine the spotlight on him now, because he's got some answering to do. He's right up there in climate change. There's another thing where they don't want to discuss the science, which is by no means settled. He was the one who said, correct me if I'm wrong here, he wanted to become a defender of faith rather than the defender of the faith. No doubt that was to embrace the new multicultural society we've got. He was a friend of Armand Hammer. Armand Hammer was a personal friend of all the Soviet premiers from Lenin downwards until he died in the 1990s as an elderly man. So Prince Charles has passed form on this. He has passed form on globalism. He's got passed form on multiculturalism. And he's now up to his neck with all this climate change stuff and with the World Economic Forum. And I think he's got some explaining to do.
Gregory.
there's an awful lot there for me to comment on. I would just say that obviously the traditional Britain group is completely opposed to globalism. We are opposed to supranational organizations, and we're actually opposed to the United Nations. We feel that it's an organization that has outlived its usefulness, much like NATO, which we are also completely opposed to, because we see it as a United States proxy force. So we are just, everyone in NATO is just doing what the Americans want them to do. And we are sending our young men into battle, into godforsaken holes like Afghanistan, to be killed for no purpose whatsoever other than to support the United States in one of the endless wars. The Americans have been involved in endless wars since the Second World War. They are just warmongers, and we should recognize this and get out of an organization that was supposedly set up to be a bulwark against communism. Well, communism has died, and it's instead of allowing the Americans to use NATO to saber rattle along the Russian border and various other places in the world, we should just say, sorry, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. And, you know, one of the few good things that Margaret Thatcher did was she got out of UNESCO. She said, Britain's not going to be in this corrupt left-wing organization, UNESCO. She took us out. And there are a whole lot of other organizations and a whole lot of treaties, international treaties, that Britain should just withdraw from. Of course, the most prominent is the 1951 United Nations Refugee Charter, which is now totally out of date, totally unworkable, and a pain in the rear end. And there are just so many of these things that are wrong. And we've had these liberal governments, liberal and socialist governments, that have joined together to take us into an international community. Now, I'm sure I don't need to tell your your listeners that internationalism is a communist conception. Lenin, all these people, you know, the Communist International, everyone's heard of that. And we should not be in all these international organizations unless it specifically assists Great Britain and the British people. And that's 8.7% of the population of this island. And that should be the only way forward for us.
It's interesting how you said that these are communist organizations, but earlier you said that that communism was defeated. Communism doesn't exist anymore.
No, you misunderstood. You misunderstood what I said. What I said was that internationalism, the concept of internationalism, is a communist idea.
Yes.
It was the communists that said international, you know, they were aiming for international government. You know, totally.
And now it seems to exist.
Well, there you are. There you are. That's exactly what we're opposed to.
Yeah. See, this is an interesting point because I think that we thought we had defeated communism, but then it basically put on a mask and came back as a different character.
Correct.
And is now, unmasking itself. Now that it's in charge, now that it's in control. Now, obviously, I'm not saying it's exactly the same as Bolshevism or Stalinism or whatever, but I think the soul of it is similar to the soul of those things. Andrew, would you like to comment on what Gregory has been saying?
Yeah, I think at one time, if we look back to the Cold War, you had communism theses, capitalism antitheses. You've got a sort of synthesis now where they've married internationalism with social Marxism to produce this synthesis. We've discussed social Marxism just now, internationalism, global capitalism, if you like, massive great global entities. And let's just give an example to your listeners. It was mentioned by Bernie Sanders, not someone I'd normally quote, the left-wing senator from the United States, tweeted it the other day, you'll probably find it. He said, as a result of this Omicron variant, he said seven or eight people have made over $10 billion because of the rise in their share prices of various pharmaceutical companies, presumably. That's the sort of thing we're talking about now. This lockdown has made billionaires trillionaires. And this is profoundly unfair. It's being done internationally using the various international bodies we're talking about, but it's not enriching the ordinary person. It's made them extremely poor. Many of them have lost their jobs, have marital difficulties. The cancer rates have gone up because they're not getting the attention they require. There's all manner of consequences that the media chooses not to discuss. And this is all part of this globalist endeavor to bring down the nation state. And both sets of, both the social Marxist variety wants to do that. They want to destroy culture and identity. And the international global capitalists want to do it as well because they want to be able to slosh their money around with the biggest possible return without the intrusion of the nation state. So long as the nation state's there, it can look after its people. It can put, it can impose restrictions on the takeover of its own national champions. That's what we're up against, and it's becoming sinister in its tone and format. Now, there's some extraordinary people who have taken our side on this. Now, you've probably got a few people amongst your listenership who are of a religious hue, and it's remarkable what people like Archbishop Vigano are saying. Archbishop Vigano was the ambassador of the Vatican sent to the United States, And he's been condemning this. And you look him up on the internet, he's been condemning these lockdowns. He's been condemning this international endeavor to destroy the nation state. And he's been making some extraordinary pronouncements. So this has woken a lot of people up. There's no question about it. This climate change nonsense is another aspect too that they dare not shine the light upon. But that's all to do with control. It's to do with breaking down the industry of the West, building up the industry of the developing world. It's about imposing remote controls on the nation state and on our corporations and on our people. And I wonder, I mean, we've got 40,000 people a year dying of hypothermia. Heaven knows, energy rates have gone up risen extraordinarily, narrowly sharply over the last year or two. And I wonder how many people are going to die of hypothermia in this country in the next year or so because they can't afford the high energy prices that our government is imposing upon them.
I think that one of the things with COVID is that it's shown us that the government really don't care about us. I mean, I think that a lot of people, including myself, had a cozy notion that, well, okay, they don't like us, they disagree with many of us on politics and whatever, but they wouldn't kill us. they don't hate us that much. They're not that negligent and they're not that malicious, but no, they really are. COVID has shown that, has proven that all of the medical testing that hasn't happened on people because COVID has dominated everything. So now people are dying of preventable, like cancer. Cancer has gone terminal when it shouldn't have. There are the complications with the vaccine. I at this point, I'm pretty damn convinced that it has an effect on people's... I think it causes blood clots, and I think those cause heart attacks and strokes. It just seems, and I'm not saying that it's a majority, of course it isn't, but clearly it's having that effect on some people. And very few people need the vaccine. So therefore, the government is knowingly encouraging people to take something which will certainly kill a certain percentage of them. That seems incredible to me, but I think that's very telling of the age we live in and the regime that we live under. Gregory?
Well, I just don't think, Westminster represents anybody but themselves. I don't think they represent us. I have written to my own MP on a number of things, and on the last thing I wrote to him about, he said, that's your opinion and you can stick it up your bottom, basically. I mean, these people just don't, once they get there, they're careerists and they don't care. Once they're in, they're in, and they don't care about anything, and they're allowing the pharmaceutical companies to push this, in my view. And make billions and billions and billions and billions out of it. And the media is a compliant organization, as it seems to me. I think the other thing when we were talking about internationalism is the way the companies everywhere have adopted an anti-national position in their advertising. All of our, you know, we are, for instance, in Britain, 8.8 people are indigenous Caucasian European people. You would expect to see that in the ads. You would expect to see all advertising represent and indeed be aimed at the majority population. Instead, what do we see? We see the ads full of people, some of them, some ads only have aliens in them. They don't have any Europeans in them at all. And this is not just happening in Britain. My friends across the world tell me this is happening in their countries as well. So what we see here is international companies taking on a clearly left-wing agenda. It's very interesting from a political perspective, because these companies, if they were in the Soviet Union, would have been taken over and closed down or taken over by the Communist Party. But here, they have adopted the liberal internationalist agenda and the socialist internationalist agenda in one. And they are trying to impose it on countries that are still indigenously very much in a majority. And internationalism, all aspects of internationalism should be fought by our government. Instead of saying, oh yes, we're in favor of globalism, globalism's the way forward. No, it's not the way forward unless you're an internationalist, unless you believe ultimately in some kind of international government, unless you believe that your government will one day have exactly the same rules and regulations as every other government in the world, and there won't be any difference between any country. Now, I would have thought that the government had got the message about Brexit, that the British people do not want this. They don't want international government. They didn't want to be in the European Union. At least the majority didn't want to be in the European Union. And the reason they didn't want to be in the European Union is because they didn't want to be governed by foreigners, and they didn't want foreigners making their laws. They felt they had a parliament that should be making their laws. Well, you know, that might be all very well. They've played to the gallery there, the government, but the other insidious thing is all the international laws that they're keeping on board. And eventually the European Union will become irrelevant politically because all the laws everywhere will be the same. It's like a Napoleonic dream that all the laws covering every particular thing will actually be identical. There'll be no individuality for any nation on earth. That's the ultimate goal. The complete 100% abolition of nationalism.
Our national identity, national culture, everything.
All those things are incorporated in nationalism.
Yes.
Nationalism has come to have a dirty word, to be a dirty word, but it's not. It need not be like that.
Yes, there's an exchange between the senior civil servants in the United Nations and the European Commission. What the European Commission pushes through most of the time, if not all of the time, comes out of the United Nations. So we didn't get out of the European Union in order to have our laws determined for us by supranational organizations such as the World Health Organization, which is in turn a subsidiary of the United Nations. There is global governance going on. It's coming down from on high. And our Conservative Party, which is a globalist occupation of government, is imposing it upon us. It's as simple as that, and it's the only way to make sense out of it all.
Yeah, and it's been quite remarkable to see that unfolding. That I think a lot of people imagined that our governments were still in charge. they might be sycophantic towards international organizations, but the authority still lay with them. I think what we've discovered is that really they're nothing. I mean, these national politicians, even Boris Johnson, even the Prime Minister himself, he famously said to some reporters, "I'm just following orders," earlier this year. Gregory.
Well, there you are. It comes out, doesn't it, that sometimes they let it slip. And let's look at the situation in Australia. I mean, it's bad enough over here. Australia's been turned into a virtual prison camp.
Yes.
And the fear is that they're going to try and do that over here, this idea of compulsory vaccination. Well, as I said to a friend the other day, I said, look, most of these MPs are in favour of abortion. And the catchphrase is, my body, my choice. Well, what about vaccination? It's all right to yank an unborn baby out of the womb, but when it comes to vaccination, in places like Austria now and elsewhere, they're imposing compulsory vaccination. And I wonder how that's going to work out. I mean, this is against everything that arose from the Second World War. The Nuremberg Code, it dealt with coercion, it dealt with compulsory vaccination and compulsory medical experiments and so on. And about a third of the Austrian population do not want to have this vaccine placed in them. Now, how is the police and the army going to deal with this? Because there's going to be a revolution there. And the internationalists in Austria, I think they'd better watch out, because I can't see the Austrian people putting up with that.
Gregory, would you like to comment on the situation in Australia or Austria? Because these do seem like key examples of what's going on.
Well, I'm a completely. I mean, I've been vaccinated. I know Andrew hasn't, but I have. But it's should always be a voluntary thing. I don't believe that any government should have the right to force an influenza vaccination on somebody, regardless of how bad the strain is. I think it should be. It's part of freedom, isn't it, at the end of the day? And I think that it's completely wrong to make vaccinations compulsory.
And as you say, it does seem to be basically the flu. I don't know if we can be arrested for saying that.
It's a form of influenza, to the best of my knowledge. Anyway, I mean, you know, I'm happy to be told I'm wrong. I'm happy to be told I'm wrong without being prosecuted.
Yes. Well, I've had it. I've had C19. I mean, it wasn't pleasant, but I can tell you I've had a lot. I've had flu, which has been a lot worse in the past. What I didn't like, I lost my taste, my sense of smell and taste, so that rather upset my palate. When consuming red wine, which I'm rather fond of, and it lasted 2 or 3 weeks. It was a nuisance. It was an irritant. But I now have the antibodies, and that's the point. Why should people with the antibodies? And those antibodies are there for life now. It's rather like measles and mumps when you got those as a child, chicken pox and so on. Generally, you get that immunity then for life. The body remembers it. So why is it that these people need to have a vaccine forced into them when they've got the antibodies? And I've raised this with my Member of Parliament, and he's not answered that question, along with a lot of other questions. I mean, perhaps he will, but I'm still waiting a response to this. And there's too many anomalies here that have to be answered. These vaccines don't confer on the vaccinated the immunity that they deserve to expect. So people who've been vaccinated can still pass it on, nor does it stop transmission. So the question then arises, well, what is the point of these vaccines? Bearing in mind that the yellow card warning system, which is the early warning system, for the government, that's employed by the government, about 4 or 5 months ago, they said that these vaccinations must stop now as a matter of emergency. What's happened? Well, the government's just ignored it. Why has it ignored it? These vaccinations, as I understand, have now killed, and they're experimental vaccinations because they haven't been approved during the usual regulatory process. There haven't been, as I understand it, any successful animal testing. There hasn't been any peer group review. And here you are, you've got this censorship of people who take an opposing view. And there's plenty of them. Some of them are the highly regarded medical experts. Some of them have said there is a danger that it's reducing the body's natural immunity, and that there's going to be a build-up of cases now which shouldn't have occurred. So you've got all of these problems that are in the pipeline. With what is and can only be described as an experimental vaccine.
What I heard about in the way of animal testing, what I've heard is that they tested mRNA vaccines on rhesus monkeys, and that there was an enormously high death rate among the rhesus monkeys. But, you know, I don't know if they've done other testing. So I don't want to pass that off as, you know, the truth. And clearly, loads of people, I mean, hundreds of millions of people have now had the vaccine. They're not dropping dead. So it clearly isn't, I don't want to give the, I don't want to scaremonger here. I'm going to be very careful about that for both moral and, you know, possibly legal reasons. It seems to have it seems to have an effect on some people, put it that way.
Yes, I mean, one doesn't want to scaremonger, and there are some theories going around which, you know, I would say is sort of out-of-reach theories, and I don't want to get involved in those because they're theories. However, I keep coming back to this. Those people who have got a contrary view are being silenced. They're being silenced by the media, and that in itself is an interesting point. How is it that the government has taken over the media, and if you listen to commercial radio, as I often do, it's being blurted out as sort of Stalinist mantras day in and day out. This fear of this latest variant has been heightened. And incidentally, I remember one of Blair's spin doctors said, always make use of a crisis. Well, they're making use of this crisis because behind it all, this immigration carries on relentlessly. So the spotlight has been turned away from that. But perhaps that's to diverge onto another topic again, which we've discussed. But yes, there are too many questions that still have not been answered. One of the contrarians, if you like, who opposes this vaccination policy and the whole government lockdown, as I understand it, is Dr. Mike Yaden. Now, in my opinion, you could not get a better alternative source of information, because he was once the head of global research at the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer. So he's right up there, right up at the top, and he's been censored relentlessly. Not only that, he went off and he formed his own biopharma company very successfully. He's a top man in the pharmaceutical industry, and he's been censored. You've got to find his stuff on BitChute. If your listeners like to go in there, they'll find all sorts of things about what he's been saying. And there's plenty more like him as well, all of them censored. And it's the way the government has managed to seize control of the media in a way that you have to look back into the 20th century to some of the unpalatable regimes who carried out similar censorship.
Well, you see, I don't. I take the point, of course, but I don't think that it's the government as such. I don't think it's I don't think it's Westminster that are controlling all of this censorship. I think that it comes from higher than that, because it's the same in every country. That's the thing. There's complete uniformity about this.
There is uniformity. One or two exceptions there. Sweden, for instance, remarkably, given how politically correct it is, they didn't have a lockdown. They've done better than we have. Then in some of the individual states of the United States, Florida, for instance, they waived their lockdown. They thought it was going nowhere. And they got a better rate of infections than California, which had a tough and strict lockdown. But I think you're right. It seems to be that there's a global power of some sort which is operating unseen. It cannot be seen. It's accountable to no one. It's accountable only to itself and to its own interests. And it seems to have seized the nation states of the world and enforced upon those states its totalitarian policies. We don't quite yet know where they're going to lead, but we know that they're not going to help us. This is international governance on a global scale. And it's going to snuff out all tradition, culture, identity, and heritage. It's going to extirpate it. And we're going to be a hell of a lot worse off answering to international governance, which cannot be seen, than we are to our own elected authorities in Westminster, who we can sack and fire as we like, even although they both follow the same policies. But at least we've got some form of representative government there.
Absolutely. Gregory, would you like to take this issue?
I agree with much of what Andrew said, with the exception that I don't myself, I'm not a scientist, so I've got really no significant knowledge about the vaccines and about what they're doing and all the rest of it. They don't, you know, we were told we had to be vaccinated. Okay, so we were vaccinated. Then we were told we had to have a second vaccination. And then about 6 months passed and I was told I had to have a third vaccination. So, you know, it all sounds a bit funny to me. But I would just like to pick up on what he said towards the end. And that is our national culture, our national heritage, our identity, and everything that it means to be British. And when I say that, I mean all the people in Britain, such as the Scots and the Welsh and so on, because actually not a great deal of these people are pure Scots or pure Welsh, because, you know, for the last 500 years at least, there's been chronic intermarriage. And this is a small island, and we have our national heritage and our national culture, and our government should always be putting us first, the British people, not the guests. When the guests come into your home, they don't have the same rights as you do in your home. And so when people come into our country, they should not benefit from the same rights and the same laws that were made for us, not for them. These people are guests, and we've got to start thinking about our people and what is best for them. And so far, all I can see is the governments doing everything they can to make sure that it's what is best for the minorities and the aliens, not what is best for the British people, who still make up 8.8% of the population of this country. And we can't go on like this. If governments purport to represent the British people, they must remember that the British people make up the overwhelming majority. Nearly 9 out of 10 people are still Indigenous British European people. And this is their natural homeland. And that should always be first and foremost in the minds of anyone at Westminster. And we've got to try and start encouraging people who should not be here to go back to their natural homelands. And we should do whatever it takes, whether it means buying their properties that they've bought here or giving them their national insurance contributions back, anything that it takes. But we should be trying to recover our country for our people. And that's the only way forward, and the future will otherwise reach a civil war state, just the way it probably will be going in France shortly, according to something like 100 members of the French military hierarchy who signed a letter to say that multiculturalism is a disaster, a failure, and there's going to eventually be a civil war. These were not nutters, they were not extremists, they were not far right, they were professional men, senior professional men in a hierarchical establishment. So, you know, if we're not going to listen to people like that, then the end is doom. That's what's going to happen. And, you know, at the moment we have governments working against the British people. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. Andrew, would you like to add anything to that?
Well, it's common sense, isn't it? I don't know of any multicultural society that actually works. I don't know of any that has led to any increase in civilization. But I can name many that have collapsed because they became multicultural. Ancient Egypt being an example of that. When you bring in millions of unassimilable elements, then they don't they're not compatible. Look at the ghettos, which we've got all over the world where these things happen. We don't have to look to America, we can look to London. People tend to stick together in their own ghettos. They're voluntary, they're not pushed in there, because they feel happier amongst their own kind. All of this was raised by Enoch Powell, one of the great politicians, the great prime minister we never had. No one listened to him. Part of that is because the media were against him. So we've got all these problems lining up. Look at London now. I mean, London has become bedlam in some parts of it. Some parts of Liverpool, the great metropolitan cities, the great cities that were once the heartbeat of the British Empire. People are moving out. They can't take it any longer. You've got the sociological problem known as white flight. They're all coming out into the country areas because they want better schooling for their children. They want to have a more peaceable life and so on, more peaceful life. Look at the crime rates. I mean, I remember back in 1971, I remember seeing the figures. The Metropolitan Police issued figures saying that 80% of murders were committed by a certain minority and 86% of the victims were white. Well, those figures aren't produced anymore. The police won't produce them because they're so controversial. The government won't produce them. And even if it was produced, then the media would stamp on them. So this bedlam is only going to get worse. Look at the grooming going on, those grooming gangs against our own people up in the north. And not
it's just
there
monstrous,
either.
Absolutely outrageous.
It is absolutely outrageous, not a thing, because the government, the police don't want to be, they're so politically correct now, they don't want to be declared racist. But we all know who's carrying it out, and they're not white Presbyterians.
No, certainly not. there's obviously so much that could be picked up on here. But one thing I would ask you is, it seems to me that, and some people have said this in the live chat, that every institution in our society seems to have been compromised, seems to have been infiltrated. And this is why I'm very glad of that the Traditional Britain Group exists, actually. And I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you just now. It really is a comfort. It's a reassurance that we do have a sane organisation, that we do have a decent organisation that is rooted in the country and is rooted in common sense and is rooted in tradition. But another point here is that I think that we need to start thinking practically, and because otherwise this clearly is just going to roll on and on. Now, obviously, I don't want you to say anything controversial and get into trouble like Piers Corbyn just did, and I don't think that anyone here would advocate the kind of stuff that he was saying the other day. And I'm not sure that I doubt that he actually meant it literally or seriously, but nonetheless. Would you like to talk about how the TBG is of use in terms of advocating change and advocating the kind of policies that a lot of people are sympathetic to? Certainly a lot of the listeners here. Why should they get involved and how can they get involved?
Well, if I can come in here first, it's important that we have a forum of some sort where our own people can meet each other with the same problems, with the same difficulties, with the same outlook, with the same fears, and can discuss amongst themselves what sort of policies can be introduced to reverse some of those fears. But it's also important to hear from how they're doing it overseas. We get a lot of speakers coming over from the continent, and it's important that we find out and learn what's going on there too. In the communist bloc, I think in Romania in particular, under Ceausescu, gatherings of more than three people were banned. That's because when you're isolated and you've got these fears, you can't generate any sort of moral comfort from speaking to your colleagues and to others who share your fears. It's very demoralizing when you find yourself isolated. So that's one of the things we try to do. We try to bring people together. And there's a hell of a lot of people with our peers with our concerns, and they want to know that there are others there like them. And my word, there are. You only have to go into the pub, and after a drink or two, everyone starts complaining about the same thing. So it's to provide that forum, to provide comfort amongst our own kind, and to hear what their views are. Gregory.
I think that at the moment, I agree. First of all, I agree completely with what Andrew has just said. And I think that, you know, we are what we used to call people at school a stirrer. And we are constantly educating people across Britain and indeed across the world with what is going on. And most people do not know what is going on. They don't know that countless boatloads of aliens come in to Britain every single day, and the government takes no action whatsoever to send them back. Doesn't turn them around. It, in fact, aids and assists them. And you see none of this on the television at all. It's completely ignored by the left-wing media, but not by us. So you can see all of this on TBG channels on social media. We have a following of over 3 million people on social media. And every single day, we have a team of our people who are posting things that are shocking and outrageous to try and wake up the British people to what is going on, because the media is not covering it. You'll remember all the outrage of the universal left, including liberals like Jacob Rees-Mogg and others, when I condemned the nomination of Doreen Lawrence to be a life peer. Nothing.
Yes, one of your famous moments.
Nothing could be more outrageous. I can't think of anything that it could be more shocking than this non-entity being given a peerage because her son was killed in a street brawl. I mean, it is beyond comprehension if you think about it. And we've got to educate people as to what is going on. It's only if people get wound up enough that they will suddenly explode and erupt and maybe hopefully vote differently. But if the media continues with its stranglehold on everything that is seriously wrong and concentrates on the endless trivia that we have to tolerate from the television set, then the people just become like morons. You know, they don't know anything. It's like having someone who is uneducated, has never been to school, and they're idiots. And that's what's going to happen in this country. So we are the educators. We are keeping people informed on a daily basis of everything shocking and wrong that is going on and that should not be going on. And it doesn't include Christmas parties, I'm afraid, however outrageous some people might think that is. There is far more going on that affects our nation. Big things. And if we don't address these things, and if the people don't finally wake up from their stupor and address these things, then our country is going to collapse eventually.
Well, I certainly agree.
So we have our seminars, we have our meetings, we have our annual conference, and even when we have our annual dinners, we always have speakers from every imaginable background. And as Andrew said, we get people over from the continent because we want to know what's happening there. We want to know what these parties are doing there. And of course, the media just say, oh, these people are all far right, far right, far right. No, they're not far right at all. They are just conservatives like us, real conservatives who believe in their people, in their nation, in their country. And so we want to hear from them. We want to hear what they think. And very surprisingly, we find that they believe what we believe. So that's rather heartening for us, and it's heartening for our audiences, because they realize that it's just not a little bunch of people in Britain that believe this. It's people all over the continent that believe this.
Well, the problems are global.
I don't want to hear that word.
Well, I was going to say rather pithily, the problems are global, even if the solutions might be local, but I'm not sure. Okay, well, we'll proceed to questions from the audience. And there have been several. Let me just get them for you. Okay. Many people are, this is from Monty Fontaine, many people are beginning to believe that there are no political solutions as the corruption in Westminster runs too deeply. We don't have a single institution that hasn't been completely compromised. What would TBG say to this? Thank you.
Yeah, well, obviously we agree with him that every institution has been compromised. But there is all, you know, while there's life, there's hope. And if we can get a party that will change the electoral system, if the Conservative Party, for instance, continued losing seats like the one in Shropshire, then we would see a change. Because parties that give themselves a name which does not reflect at all their agenda deserve to die, and new parties need to come in. And you know, the establishment have been very, very hard at work making sure that the leaders of every right wing or conservative organization in Great Britain get some kind of a conviction. So that they can turn around and say, oh, these people are all criminals. Yeah, very smart, but not very smart. What's going to happen is that eventually these old, tired, worn out, useless political parties who for so long have sat at Westminster playing musical chairs every 4 or 5 years, they're going to start cracking up. People are going to say, look, we've had enough. We have had enough. We are waking up. And once they do that, things will start to change. And I think also in universities and other places, people need to fight back. They too easily accept, you know, that they're going to be expelled. And I think there should be legal aid available for people who are being treated in this manner. And at the moment, legal aid is extremely restricted. Of course, not restricted to complete foreigners challenging our courts against their deportation. But it should be available to people whose lives are compromised by the liberal left in the establishments.
Andrew, would you have anything to say to this about there being political solutions still or not?
Well, I agree with Gregory, of course. We mustn't give up hope. There must have been a time over in the communist bloc where people did give up hope. Where it looked impossible that they would ever regain their freedoms. And that occurred. It occurred in the 1989 uprisings. Many of those countries now, Slovakia, Poland, Hungary, they've got decent, relatively decent regimes there. That's not the right word. Relatively decent governments. where people now can speak their mind freely, far more freely than we can over here. So it is possible that at some stage there will be an uprising against all of this nonsense going on. Whether it's possible to reform the Conservative Party or not, I don't know. If enough people joined it, then that would be feasible, perhaps. But I don't think it could ever be done on a wide enough scale. Personally, I always vote, but I always write my comments against the candidates on the voting slip, and then it goes to the box. That is a good way of doing it, because the candidates then get to see the comments that have been issued against their names by the returning officer. So I would recommend that is the way that your listeners vote in the future, unless they've got a particularly good candidate, which I very much doubt, because unfortunately the party has been taken over by the globalists. But yes, I understand your viewer's concern. I agree with what he says, but we must never give up hope. However black it may look, there's always a possibility that things will right and rectify themselves.
Do you think that there is a need for a new political party to replace the Conservatives? I mean, I'm wondering, because I do think that the time, as I said, we need to think practically. And I mean, I don't believe that this situation is going to rectify itself. It might do if society just falls apart. But as things are, there's no reason why this situation would just heal itself. So I wonder, should we be trying to take back the Conservative Party? Should we try to merge the smaller parties on the right, or to create a new party altogether? Or should we just concentrate on cultural campaigning just now? Gregory, would you like to take that?
I think that we must all continue to fight for a change in the electoral system. We must change over to proportional representation, because if you really believe in democracy, then you must believe that the majority, the overwhelming majority of votes cast should count for something, not a minority of votes, which is what it is at the moment. I think another thing we should do, I do believe that we should have compulsory voting. I think everybody should be forced to vote, because if they want to live in a democracy, they should have to take part in it. Otherwise, we get lopsided results. We can get results as low as 30% of the electorate voting. That's no good. That's obviously no good. So, you know, they didn't have a problem with this in Australia. They've always had compulsory voting. Everybody has to vote. And at least, you know, they've got a crappy government now, but, you know, that's what they voted for. I suppose we could say the same thing, but it would certainly help if everybody voted. We'd get a better idea of what people were thinking. And I think if we had proportional representation, then things would most definitely change, because it would mean that smaller parties would have a chance of getting seats in the parliament, where at the moment, we only have to look at the situation when the UKIP got nearly 4 million votes, 4 million votes, and they only had one MP, and he was someone who defected. So that's the only reason he kept his seat, was because the locals liked him. So 4 million votes, no seats, more or less. The Scottish National Party get 1.6 million seats, and they get 1.6 million votes, and they get 50 seats. What? Something wrong here. How is it that nobody can see that that is patently wrong? That something is wrong. I just don't understand how there's not a scandalous uproar about this. And yet everyone just accepts it. You know, we seem to be living in an age of docile acceptability. The biggest things affecting our country, people are not demonstrating against. They're talking about them at dinner parties, but they're not demonstrating them against them. And that's, you know, these are the things that we have to do on the electoral side. And if we don't change the electoral system, then, you know, we may just have to wait for some kind of revolution or civil war. You know, it happened, as Andrew said, it happened in the Eastern Bloc. They'd had communist totalitarian regimes for 50 and 70 or 80 years. But while there's life, there's hope. Eventually, when it all seemed, I'm old enough to remember these regimes, and they all looked as solid as a rock. They had armies, secret police, and everyone thought nothing would ever change there. I mean, the people there thought nothing would ever change, the majority of the people. But others, like us, were fighting. And that's what we've got to keep doing. We've got to keep up the pressure. The traditional Britain group is a pressure group. We're going to keep up the pressure however we can. And that's the only way forward. That's the only way there's going to be change, because we currently have a situation where there is no justice. There's no justice. There's no justice in the institutions. People have been squeezed out of the institutions because they have a non-liberal or non-socialist world viewpoint. And so they have been excluded. Other people, of course, have been prosecuted for expressing views that 30 or 40 years ago were perfectly normal and mainstream. And so we can't continue down this way. And eventually, just like in the old Eastern Bloc, the people will have had enough. As for the Conservative Party, what happens to it? Which way it goes? Well, I think it will go down the lavatory eventually, because all these golden oldies along the South Coast in places like Worthing and all these people that say, I always voted Conservative, they're all going to die. And what they failed to do, the Conservative Party, they have failed to address the left-wing takeover of the education system and the media. And these two organizations together, the education system and the media, they have brainwashed our young people, the majority of our young people, into being liberals and socialists. And so when all these old people that have always voted for the last 50 years for the Conservative Party, when they die, there will be no one to take their place at the ballot box.
Yes.
It'll be their own fault. And I'll be having the last laugh.
Yes. okay, we can get through some remaining questions. This is one for Andrew. Andrew, is it time that the UK, and this isn't my wording, so, but anyway, here we go. Is it time that the UK bins Elizabeth the Useless, along with the rest of the Windsors, and restores the Jacobite claimants held by the Franz Wittelbach, Duke of Bavaria?
Very interesting question. Well, I think the Duke of Bavaria is a liberal anyway. I don't think we're going to get much comfort from him. The British monarchy is supported by probably some 80% of the population. The present Queen is very well regarded. She's towards the end of her reign now. She might carry on rather like a mother, but she's not going to, you can't see much more than perhaps 10 years there. I mean, I don't want to forecast these things. Who's going to take over? It's Prince Charles, and he's not held highly in the public esteem. He's got many questions to answer about his political intrusions, about his friendships with certain people who are not friends of our nation. And there could be a reckoning there. I don't know. The royal family has disgraced itself on so many levels. It has a constitutional duty, though. It's very important within the realm. It holds a position, that sovereignty of the realm is the crown in Parliament. We mustn't forget that. There are reserved powers to the crown which can be used in terms of legislation. Take, for instance, the Lisbon Treaty, the Constitutional Treaty. It would have been possible for the monarch to have told Gordon Brown at the time, you were elected, as were Conservative MPs, on the basis of holding a referendum with any further transfer of power to the European Union. And that legislation could have been refused. It's a reserved power of the Crown. The Crown is very important within our fine checks and balances. And whilst it cannot get involved in politics, it does have a duty to uphold the Constitution. So, to get to the substance of the question, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. The Duke of Bavaria, or the Prince of Bavaria, is not one of ours. And I don't know where it will go. We can look back in history. We can look at the Glorious Revolution in 1688, 1689, which went up the line and down and down sideways and came down at the other end somewhere. And William of Orange was brought over with Mary. So there is historical precedent. But I think a lot's going to depend on what happens when Charles takes over. He's not popular. He's got many questions to answer with some of his links with some of these globalists we've been discussing today. So I think that would summarise my views in a nutshell.
Okay. I'll ask you some other questions. If we could answer them quite briefly, that would be good. Gregory, does the TBG welcome the prospective Kanzuk agreement? This is with the Anglosphere countries.
I think we do to a point. I think that it was a disgrace when we joined the European Economic Community to the exclusion of the old empire, and particularly to the exclusion of our people in places like Australia and New Zealand, which at that time were virtually completely European, and to a large extent, sort of 86% or something, completely British descent. And, you know, we just sort of basically dropped them. And I think it's good that, you know, it's never too late to do these things and to say, we are going to make you special trading partners. Yep, I think that's great. I don't know so much about Canada, which I see as a sort of mark to America, and ultra-liberal, and who have abandoned conservatism, as far as I can see. And of course, you have the great French part of Canada, which can't stand the British anyway, like the French. And so I think, yeah, but certainly the Australians and the New Zealanders, I think we should renew our trading agreements with them with no holds barred. As for the US part of it, well, I am slightly anti the United States for a whole range of reasons. I don't believe that there is any special relationship with the United States and Great Britain. I think that's a mythology which was demonstrated fully in the Suez Crisis, where they ordered us to leave the canal zone, which we had built, us and the French. We had built it and we owned it. And the whole land area had been ceded to us by the authorities of the day. And so I don't think we should ever forget the international humiliation that the United States brought upon us there, and the same with Palestine, and the way the United States completely 100% undermined Great Britain when we had the mandate, and indeed in the period after the mandate. So I think history is very important, and I don't see that the Americans have done us any favors whatsoever. And I don't think that the Americans have always had protectionist arrangements, and that included us. And I think the Americans, more than anyone else, go to a great extent to try and put political pressure on other countries using trade. So I'd want to know what was involved in any trade agreement with the United States.
Okay. Actually, connected to that, what do you think of Joe Biden's comment promising a winter of death for the unvaccinated? Is this to be interpreted as some kind of threat?
Well, let me come in here. It sounds ominous, doesn't it? But if anyone listened to what people like Professor Ferguson were saying last year at the beginning of the outbreak, people like me should now be dead. I haven't been vaccinated. A lot of my friends haven't been vaccinated. We don't trust the science because there hasn't been any serious debate. So far, the narrative just doesn't stack up. But if you look at some of the countries that have been vaccinated, Gibraltar, one of the counties in Ireland which has the highest vaccination rate, Israel, for instance, there are more people in hospital now who have been vaccinated than those who haven't, as a proportion of the population who have and who have not. So there's a lot of questions that have got to be asked about this. And I've been watching what Biden's been doing over there. He's been requiring compulsory vaccinations for government employees and so on, in the same way that we have over here. And I understand that something like 60,000 people working in care homes and similar institutions have simply resigned. They're not going to have the vaccination. So some care homes are now having to close because they haven't got the staff. So it's not looking a pretty picture to the government. And it looks as though, feasibly, this whole thing's going to crack. Once people start asking the sort of questions we've been asking tonight, and once they realise that there are no answers, then the government narrative's going to crack, rather like the communist bloc did in 1989. That's how I see it.
Okay. Oh, another question for Andrew. Have your smell and taste senses returned after your COVID travails?
Well, yes, they did. It lasted about 2 or 3 weeks, this. It was the usual thing, flu. You get flu, blocked nose, that sort of thing. But I noticed this time the taste had become somewhat poorer than usually it was. And my snout, I just couldn't smell as I did. So it really upset my palate. I couldn't, I just stopped drinking red wine because I couldn't enjoy it as I did. And 2 or 3 weeks later, it all came back to normal. I have had worse flus. This one was probably on the Richter scale between 1 and 10. It was probably sort of 6 or 7. I've had much worse than that before. But thankfully, yes, I'm enjoying my red wine again and my whiskey.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I was wondering about that. Because you never hear about the long-term effects. We've got this thing, long COVID, but no one ever defines what it is. I think that's just a scaremongering tactic. Are there any motivations other than money and the consolidation of power behind the driving the COVID narrative? That's a huge question. I think it is just ultimately the consolidation of power, even though it has the dressings of technocracy, a pseudo-religion, various things that could be said. Gregory, would you like to take this? Motivations for the COVID narrative?
I just don't know. I don't know enough about the whole business. I just really, if I'm honest, I just switch off. What I would say is that you can't restrict people's freedoms year in, year out without some kind of a revolt. I don't know why the media, the media like a story. They like a big, they like a big story and they like to thrash it to death. But why they like thrashing it to death for 2 years running is quite beyond me. And it's very, very boring listening to the news, particularly the BBC. I mean, it's a total switch off. I don't know what's driving it, because it's no longer interesting and it's just winding people up.
And I think the people are getting fed up having to have all these booster vaccines. When I know people who've had these things, they've been extremely ill for 1, 2, 3 weeks afterwards. They've been in pain. They've sworn that they won't do it again. The more boosters that come, the more people are going to rebel against it. And if the government doesn't see that, then it's completely out of touch. I think to answer your question, there's one or two other points. The NHS doctors, nurses, they've been told they cannot speak out about this. If they do, their livelihoods will be on the line.
And that's incredible to me. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I find that absolutely amazing.
Well, that's it. And you're absolutely right. And it's another instance of the censorship that's going on. And it's this censorship which is the most insidious factor behind it all. The fact that people are being censored. Some of the world's leading experts cannot speak over the media about this. You've got to find them on BitChute or Rumble or some of these other alternative media outlets. That is the most sinister of the lot.
Yeah, indeed. Gregory?
Can I just say, this is just like the climate change business. Great Britain produces 0.04% of the world's emissions. I mean, it's meaningless. It's completely meaningless. And yet our government is thrashing us to death over climate change. And this is really a left-wing hobby horse. And, the left always have to have a campaign of some kind or the other. It used to be apartheid or it was General Pinochet. There's always got to be a big campaign for the left. And at the moment, it's climate change. And, the media have not mentioned that for the past, at least where I live, for the past 4 days, there has been no wind at all. Nothing. No wind. Not even a breeze. So there's nothing turning up here. And, it doesn't get a mention. And the media are the virus.
Well, sorry. Yes. Let's ask one or two further questions on this. You don't need a scientific degree. I haven't got a scientific degree, but I can ask the questions. It was much warmer here during the Roman times when the Romans were growing vines and olives up in what's now Northumberland. When the Chinese Navy during the Middle Ages, when we had another period of global warming, the Chinese Navy, I think in 1420, sailed a fleet up to the North Pole and reported no ice. Now, how is this possible? I mean, well, it shows that climate changes, it varies, but we didn't have a combustion engine then in those days. So why is it that people are now saying that the combustion engine is responsible for all of this? Well, what we know to answer that point is climate changes all the time. As I understand it, over the last few years, we're in a small period of global cooling again. In 1991, I think a volcano out in the Philippines spewed so much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And again, as I understand it, Professor Ian Clymer, I think, is the person. He's got a very good website. You can look it up. He's an Australian professor. And I think it was him or one of his colleagues who raised the point that more carbon dioxide emissions came from that single volcano than from all the emissions that have come since the Industrial Revolution. So there you are. It's a few questions that are not being asked.
All right. And then there was a final question. Does the panel only believe in democracy, or would they support a king or emperor if he had our views? Gregory, would you like to take that first?
Democracy is a bit of a fallacy, isn't it? Really?
Yes.
I mean, if we're honest, you know, if we look at the way it works in most countries, you end up with parties in government who behave dictatorially. They're like, and they say, we were voted in, so, you know, we can do what we like. We've just seen in Denmark where the liberal left have prosecuted a former minister, for doing what she believed was right. And I think that, you know, democracy is a bit of a fallacy. I think it could be streamlined. I think it could be streamlined. Was a big mistake giving the vote to women, in my view. Big mistake. That was a serious error of judgment. And, you know, the French didn't give them the vote till after the Second World War. And yet the French are the people that bang on about equality. I think democracy everywhere has demonstrated its failure, its own failure. The more people scream the word democracy, the more I know they don't actually believe in it.
Well, I can't support you on that point, Gregory. I think women, of course, are entitled to the vote. Let's not get involved in an argument along those lines. But let's say then that we had an opportunity, and he came back to life from the Eildon Hills, where King Arthur was meant to be with his 30 knights. They're going to appear when the timing is right, when the country's about to collapse. I keep on saying to all my friends, well, he's cutting it a little bit too fine. But let's say that Robert the Bruce came back and we had an opportunity to vote for him on the ballot paper. Or indeed, down in England, Queen Elizabeth I, and we had an opportunity to vote for her on the ballot paper. Well, I know exactly where my vote would go. North of the border, it would be for Robert the Bruce, and south of the border, it would be for Elizabeth I. So I hope that answers the question.
Absolutely. Now, finally, could you tell people about the TBG annual itinerary, the events or things that the TBG does that people could get involved with? Gregory.
Now, just give a postscript to my comment on democracy. I was rather speaking off the cuff, and not on behalf of the TBG, but on behalf of myself. I just feel that democracy is over an overrated fallacy. For all the reasons we've discussed in this program, the TBG should be having a seminar in March, we hope. It will depend upon the government's regulations. And certainly we'll be holding another conference at the very beginning of October, a bit earlier than the last couple. What we hold in between, again, we haven't planned ahead because of this COVID crisis. So we just have to take it and play it by ear at the moment.
Okay. And each year you do a Christmas social in December.
We had a terrific Christmas social. You were there. It was very good. There were 76 people paid to come, at least. I presume they were all there. I think they're nearly all ticked off. It went very, very well. They had a buffet and in a very central part of London in Mayfair, and it was pretty cheap as well. So all things considered, it was a very good night.
Indeed. I think it might be appropriate to end with somebody sent in a quotation from Nicolas Gomez Davila.
Oh, yes.
Or Davila. And he says, and it just seems very appropriate for the TBG. He says, the modern world demands that we approve what it should not even dare ask us to tolerate. And it's absolutely true, of course. Okay. Well, let's end it there. So thank you very much to Gregory Loderfrost and Andrew Moffat from the Traditional Britain Group for appearing on Millennial. You were both on last year, and I thought it went very well. It was a popular one, and so I'm glad to have you on each year to update people and talk about the year's events. So okay, well, thank you very much. I'll be back in very shortly with F. Roger Devlin. Then after that, it will be Anti-Dem, and then Carl Thorburn. I should also say that Endeavour's appearance has been rescheduled. Just have a look at the schedule to find out when he's going to be on. I can't remember offhand. And somebody asked about Robin Riley's hangout. If that isn't available, then I'll look into that later and make it available. There's no reason why it shouldn't be. So, okay, I'll be back soon with F. Roger Devlin. In the meantime, thank you, Gregory and Andrew. And please, people, look into the TBG. It's a great organisation.
So, thank you very much. And may I wish all your listeners and viewers a very happy, relaxed Christmas and a great New Year.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to both of you. Okay. I'll be back very soon. Bye-bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.